Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Kim.
And I'm Sharon Kim.
And welcome to Research Sense for Korean American Therapy, a podcast that removes barriers and gives you a rundown of the latest Korean American mental health research. Today's episode is related to suicide. If you or anyone around you listening would find it uncomfortable or triggering, we encourage you to stop listening to this episode and considering listening to one of the other ones. Additionally, if you or someone you know is at risk of suicide, please seek out help from a mental health professional or use the suicide prevention hotline by dialing 988. Interpreters in multiple languages are available through this free service. Listener discretion is advised for today's episode, and please prioritize your mental well-being. Today's paper is entitled, Please Forgive Me, Asian and Pacific Islander Americans' Suicide Notes by Y. Joel Wong, Kuo Deng, and Yi Lee. You know, suicide is such a tough topic to talk about. It's, you know, I think one of the things that always gets me when I think about suicide is I've never met anyone who has never had any kind of experience with it, meaning like either they had thoughts themselves or they know of someone in their lives that was seriously considering it, or they had a friend out of doing it for some reason. It's something that is pretty pervasive. Sharon, have you ever met anyone with suicidal thoughts?
Yeah. So personally, I struggled with suicidal ideation for many years. And it was mostly during my high school years when I felt like my family didn't understand me. I was also experiencing sexual abuse from a partner. And my family had no idea about that, about the trauma that I was going through. And yet they wanted me to end that relationship. They were being very forceful about that and even mentioned cutting ties with me or getting thrown out, all these threats that tried to make me end the ties when I couldn't, when I felt like I couldn't. So for me, in my mind, going through all those things inside and outside the house, I thought my only option was to end my life. And I think that's why I thought a lot about suicide. I thought about ways to take my own life. In the end, I couldn't. I couldn't do it because being a Christian, the thought of there being a God, and I knew there was a God, I had experienced him before, and him judging me for my actions, that really kept me from taking the final step. Mm-hmm. Now, looking back, as my depression is getting treated after being able to form a family and living a really healthy, meaningful life, looking back, I'm really, really grateful that I didn't take my life. And that's what I told my students too. In the past, I would tell my students, I know it's hard, but please don't take your life. Just wait, because life is beautiful. The world is beautiful. There are so many things that are hurtful about the world, and there are so many broken things in the world. And yet, there are also beautiful things that you will be able to experience later on when you look back. And so I'm really grateful that I didn't take my life, but I've experienced a lot of trauma inside the home, outside the home, that made me want to take my life. And therefore, I think I understand the point of view of, even though some people think culturally, they think that suicide is a selfish act, I sometimes think maybe not. Maybe that was the only option that that person felt at that moment.
Wow. Thank you for sharing such a personal thing. And I really appreciate you bringing your perspective with it. And I appreciate you even more for not going through with it, because I've enjoyed our friendship. And who knows, this podcast probably wouldn't have existed without you either. So glad that you're here. A lot of the things that you're talking about, your thinking process of what you're going through, seems to be what goes through the mind of someone who had completed suicide. And so a big question is, well, how do we know what a person was thinking if they had died from suicide? And this particular group of researchers decided to take a look at suicide notes that had been left behind by those who had completed suicide. And it's unusual in that it's a group of Asian and Pacific Islander Americans. So it's specific to us. Unfortunately, we don't know exactly which Asian groups they're a part of, but it is unique in that way. And these Notes, I mean, though it sounds like they're all written, they can be handwritten notes, video messages, texts, and emails that have been collected through this large study.
I was really interested to study this research paper because, I mean, who studies suicide notes? What a novel way to think about suicide, right? And to think about what are some of the things that they mention, why do they mention these things, and can they give us a hint or clue about what might have helped if they hadn't completed suicide? So I think it's a very novel way to look at suicide. So I was really intrigued to read this article.
I just want to emphasize that point you just made, Sharon. Most of the times what we learn about those who have gone through suicide is we hear from friends and families and their perspective and what they see, but we lose a lot of what they can't see. Like, sure, you might really know someone, but you don't always know exactly what they're thinking or going through at any given moment. And this is one of the only ways that we have available of being able to see what was going through the mind of someone who was completing suicide. And part of me feels like I'm nosing into like someone else's life by looking at someone else's note. But I think the true value of it is if we can take a look at what they wrote about, is it possible, like you said, to discover some protective factors? Are there ways that we can prevent thoughts of suicide? So let's jump into the background of the literature. What do we know about suicide within psychological research? Two big ideas come from the research work that's done on suicide. One is perceived burdensomeness. And I think this goes back to what you were talking about in your experience with your family and what you were going through. It's that perception that I am a burden to society, families, my group of friends, or someone. It's like, I'm not contributing. I'm just this weight that they have to carry around.
Yeah, like you're not a good enough daughter or son or spouse, right? So those are the burdensomeness that you might feel that might lead you to consider suicide. The other concept is thwarted belongingness, which means you thinking that you're not a valued member of a family or a social group. So for instance, if you have experience in feeling lonely, being bullied or abused by others, relationship breakups or death or separation from a loved one, and others not really understanding you. That's what I was going through in my family, right? So feeling like I wasn't being understood and not feeling supported by my family. Those are some of the things that are under the thwarted belongingness concept that might lead someone to consider suicide.
There's been so many times that we've talked about, even in this podcast, of Korean Americans and Asian Americans experiencing that lack of belongingness, the feeling that you don't belong somewhere, like you don't belong at your workplace, you don't belong in your school, you don't feel like you belong in your family or your neighborhood, and how those things are navigated. If that belongingness is thwarted so much, it can be a major contributor to someone really thinking about suicide.
In fact, research on Asian American college students in 2011 showed that perceived burdensomeness, what we just talked about, feeling like you're a burden to someone or to family, to society, and thwarted belongingness, not feeling like you belong somewhere, significantly predict suicide ideation. So the more you feel like you're a burden, the more you feel like you don't belong in a group, the more likely you are to think about suicide.
And going along with that same idea, they've also cited within a different study looking at that family problems tend to be one of the biggest reasons that Asian American college students consider suicide. And if you don't feel like you belong to your family and you feel like you're a burden to them, that can be a place where those thoughts do come in. All right, so we know a little bit of our background. We know what they plan to do in this research study. Let's talk about how they actually did it. So the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, have a national violence death reporting system, and it's a massive data set. They're collecting all this information, and part of what they collect are the suicide notes from completed suicides. Now, one thing I do want to emphasize, and is a major limitation of this study, is they don't have the actual notes. So they weren't looking at the actual notes or recordings that the decedents left behind. they were looking at what the law enforcement officers or whoever had been on that case had summarized or paraphrased or included details of regarding that particular note. So they went through all of that information.
So the National Violence Death Reporting System has about 3,657 APIA decedents who died by suicide. And this was from 2003 to 2017 across 37 states. And 70% were classified as male and 30% as female. 83% were born outside of the U.S. And the average age was 42 years old. But the age range was from 11 years old to 103 years old. And 31% of those 3,600 decedents left suicide notes. So about 1,130 decedents left suicide notes, which is actually lower than the U.S. white majority. The white majority, usually 42% of them leave suicide notes, whereas only 31% of Asian and Pacific Islander Americans left suicide notes.
And so what are the two big questions that the researchers are trying to answer through the study? Well, the first one is, let's get a little bit of a picture of like, who are the ones that are most likely to leave a note? And the second question, I think, is the biggest question for the study is, what do these notes say? And in other words, what are some patterns and things that are coming up? What are some common themes that are seen across these suicide notes? So the first research question, who leaves suicide notes? Well, according to this study and based on the demographic information that was concluded, they tended to be females and youths. And youths is described as being 24 years of age or younger, were much more likely to leave suicide notes than those who are older and also than those who are male.
And what was interesting was that researchers thought this was because APIA female youths probably possess the least amount of social power in their families. They're single, they're females. And so leaving suicide notes is kind of like an act, an opportunity for them to be heard. And that's their hypothesis for why females and youths are more likely to leave suicide notes.
Yeah, because females tend to be the ones in a lot of these Asian families to have the least amount of social power. It's not to say that all females do and that in all situations they don't have social power, but they tend to have less social power than their male counterparts in a lot of these families. All right, so now we're getting a picture of who's most likely to. The next question is, well, what does it say? What are some of the themes that are coming up? And the first major theme that they touch upon is, to whom are these notes addressed to? These notes tend to be addressed to family members. They're the most frequent addressees, followed by spouses or partners, friends, and then even some addressed to law enforcement officers.
So after they address their suicide note to somebody, they mention difficulties. And what were the most frequently mentioned difficulties in these suicide notes? Because 50%, about half of the suicide notes that the researchers studied, included notes about difficulties that they were experiencing. The most frequently mentioned difficulty was psychological distress, followed by thwarted belongingness, not feeling like you belong. Physical illness was the third reason. And then desire for death, wanting to die. Other difficulties like work-related problems, and then the sixth problem or difficulty that was mentioned the most was perceived burdensomeness.
Some of the examples that they included from the thwarted belongingness included a female adult who wrote that she never felt wanted or loved by her mother and did not feel well treated by her colleagues at work. And so we see that lack of belongingness both in the family and in the workplace. An example of the perceived burdensomeness that the researchers included in their paper was a male youth who suffered from drug abuse and was estranged from his family. He wrote that although suicide might be seen as selfish, by being alive, he was only being a source of stress to his loved ones. The things that these decedents are going through are not unusual. They're not something that is unheard of, that they're not that exists in every single life in the exact same way, but it does exist across a lot of people. So after these difficulties, another thing that they mention are some grievances, of course, like some things that they felt like weren't good in their lives. So they talked about explicitly blaming certain individuals for their life and what they were going through. But what's interesting is that grievances What we would have thought would have been in the majority of these notes was found in only 8% of the notes left behind. And then the last thing that the researchers found across all these different notes was conciliatory messages. So a lot of them included things like absolving their loved ones of blame, expressing love and apologizing, asking for forgiveness. An example of this was one male adult apologized to his father for dying before he did, and not fulfilling his duty to take care of his father. So there's a lot of these kind of conciliatory messages that are in there. I think there was another example of someone just mentioning how much that they loved the family members, these notes as well. So this was found in over a third of the messages. So 36% of the notes that they looked at had some sort of conciliatory message in them.
So only 8% of suicide notes included grievances, 36% include conciliatory messages, half of them, 47%, include difficulties or the struggles that they went through before choosing to take their lives, and then 40% of them included an addressee, like who are they writing to?
So what can we learn from this? What are some of the implications now that we've read the study about these notes?
One thing that we can find is that as Asian Americans, we are very interpersonal. Our family matters a lot. Relationships matter a lot. So relationships, especially family relationships, can be a major protective factor. So if somebody is struggling with suicide ideation, some of the interventions that they can work on or we can work with them on is building and strengthening those family relationships, relationships with their colleagues, things like that.
And there's lots of different ways of doing that. That could just be spending time with them. That could be having coffee with them. I think you and I had gone through the mental health first aid training, and a lot of that is just asking, how are you? But really meaning that question and listening to how someone is actually doing and really being a listening ear to them. Now, that seems like a great intervention and a great recommendation to make, but sometimes we have strained relationships in our families, don't we? What do we do in those situations? Like, yeah, I want to build a better relationship with so-and-so, but we have a strained relationship. So this might be a place where you might want to consider getting the help of a mental health professional. And one of the things that I would recommend when you're looking for a mental health professional to help with strained relationships like this is trying to find someone who is versed in understanding the cultural differences, understanding your cultural background a little bit. And moreover, if it's intergenerational, like someone who can appreciate those intergenerational differences as well.
That's really helpful. I think the only thing I wanted to add is that suicide in our Korean culture is such a taboo. When somebody completes suicide, we don't talk about it. We kind of silence it. We don't allow other people to talk about it. We talk behind people's backs. Instead of that, I think what we could do is we could first prevent, right? Do the prevention work of building, strengthening relationships, strained relationships, like you talked about, seeking help from mental health professionals, that third person who can provide a very neutral point of view and facilitate dialogue between a parent and a child, for instance, and be a force of help and positivity, and just being able to seek help and letting go of our shame. Just let go and put that down, because at the end of the day, life is what matters. It's not your pride. You should let that go and be able to save the relationship that you have with your child or with your parent or with your family member or with your friend.
I think those are great suggestions. And if I may be so bold, I would challenge any listener who has made it to this point of today's episode to reach out to a friend or a family member that they haven't talked to in a while and see how they're doing and just be a good listening ear. All right. Today was a bit of a heavy episode. The last thing I want to leave y'all with is if you or someone you know is at risk of suicide, please seek out help from a mental health professional or use the suicide prevention hotline from any US phone by dialing 988. This is a free service, and they also have access to interpreters who can interpret many different languages. If you are looking for a language other than English or Spanish, it may take a few seconds or a little bit longer for that connection to be made, but please be patient and you will be connected with someone.
Our next episode is going to be on the examination of Korean immigrant mothers' parenting practices, so please join us for our next episode.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our episode, please subscribe to our podcast and check out more at mustardseedgeneration.org
and samuelykim.com. To keep these episodes coming, rate and share on wherever you listen to this podcast.